Committee to order. It is 1:03 p.m. Tuesday, April 16th. We're in the State Capitol, Room 120, the Grunberg Room. Present are Representative Thompson, Representative Jackson, my Vice Chair, Representative Tuck, and we've just been joined by Representative Rauscher, and I am Chair Ledoux. Representative Tarr is going to be joining us, but she has indicated that she's running errands and is just going to be a few minutes late. So let the record reflect that we do have a quorum to conduct business. Please silence all of your electronic devices. Before we begin, I'd like to introduce my committee aide, Deneen Tuck, as well as Debbie Tillinghast with House Records and Taylor Kelly, who is moderating the meeting. Representative Tuck will chair the presentation of the first bill, as I will be presenting. I will take back the gavel when we go to public testimony, so at ease until we do that.
The House Military Veterans Affairs Committee will come back to order. Joining us also is Representative Kopp. Right now we're going to take up the House Bill 109, the Military Children's School Residency Waiver. And it is my understanding that we have Tammy Pearl from the Department of Defense is online for testimony, available if anyone has any questions. And Representative Ledoux, if you would like to go ahead and present your bill.
Thank you. It is a real simple bill, and I know those are always dangerous words to say. And by the way, my name is Gabrielle Ledoux, and I represent House District Number 15, which is Muldoon, and it includes the Elmendorf portion of J-Bear. And this is my committee aide, Deneen Tuck. So, House Bill 109 seeks to allow military children with residency outside of the state, but with documentation of a pending military relocation to the state, access to preliminary registration, enrollment, or application to a school district at the time that the process is open to the general student population. So proof of residency is temporarily waived until the student begins school. Once the student begins school, their parent or guardian has 10 days to provide proof of residency in the school district. So normally, if you're not an Alaska resident, you can't enroll in Alaska schools. And so this becomes a hardship for military kids who know they're transferring because their folks have the orders. And there are two particular ways that it would help military children and military families. The first off is, so let's say you're going to high school and there are certain requirements for graduation. Well, sometimes if you get there too late, those courses that you need for graduation, they're already filled up. So you've got a real problem there with the courses that you need for graduation, or you need for college, or you need for some other requirement, and they've already filled up. And if you could register when everybody else was registering, you'd at least have a shot at things. The second thing, time, where it's really important and would be really helpful is if you're trying to get into one of the lottery schools. So those lotteries occur before you're a resident. So you won't be able to get into any of those lottery charter schools. So for those reasons, I think the bill would be very helpful to military families. We've sent this bill out to the school district. I've talked to a couple of people in Anchorage about it, and they think it's a good idea. As far as I know, we don't have anybody online from, although we've attempted to, anybody online from the school district to testify, but we do have somebody from the Department of Defense for testimony and for questions. So if you have any questions for me or if you have any questions for Deneen, now's your opportunity.
Any questions from committee members?
Sure.
Representative Kopp.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Ledoux, thank you for bringing this forward. Question, looking at the bill on page 1, particularly line 9 and 10, just thinking this through, where it says that the parent, so here, when we're talking about parent, we're talking about a parent serving on active duty, and they are transferred or pending transfer to a station in the state under an official military order. So that parent will provide to the school district of wherever they're going, my guess is, written proof of residence, and I would say or intended residence. Otherwise, they may get their orders 30 days, 60 days ahead of their actual move date, and they could be, you know, they could have their child enrolled ahead of time. But by saying, I think within 10 days after the arrival date, also that language tends to say if you don't do it within 10 days, you can't get it. You can't enroll in a public school where you otherwise would be eligible because you, in fact, did not do it within 10 days after the arrival date. So I just think that would possibly be clearer. I would just run this by you. If it said the parent of the student shall provide to the school district written proof of residence or intended residence on an official document stated in the military orders. That way, we're not trapping ourselves by setting a 10 days after arrival date, and we're also recognizing that you may have an intended residence and that you haven't actually left. You got your deployment or your new orders, and you're maybe 60 days out or 30 days out. But you could at least, if you had that, you could immediately talk to the school in the district where you will be and say, "Hey, I'd like to enroll my child." So just questions, but I love the idea and the intent of the bill. I think it's great. Just something to discuss.
You know, I'd like to run that through Tammy, and also I'm not sure if we have anybody from Ledger Legal on the line. But the way I was thinking that this was going to work was that they can simply enroll once they have those orders, and then after they've gotten here, the child is already registered. Then after they've gotten here, they're supposed to provide the school district with this stuff 10 days afterwards.
Representative Jackson. Oh, wait.
Madam Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity to speak on this bill today. This is obviously very important to the Department of Defense, and we see this as an important opportunity, especially for the state of Alaska and the 10,000 children, approximately 10,000 K-12 children.
Ms. Perot?
Yes. Can you hear me okay now?
Yeah, this is Representative Tuck. Would you please state your name and affiliation on the record, and then go ahead and
yes, this is Tammy Perot with the Department of Defense. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak about this bill today, House Bill 109, and the opportunity to answer this question about whether there should be some adjustments to the timeline around the timing of the 10 days or some adjustments around the timing of orders. Is that what you're asking me to address? Is that correct?
Yes, I believe so. Representative Kopp.
Okay.
Yes, please.
This question has come up in other states, and because the language of the bill is not compulsory and there's not any required outputs in that, it provides some flexibility to school districts, and there's not it provides some flexibility to the school district in that if that the 10 days is put there as what is going to be in statute, but there's not any negative outcome if the family doesn't meet that exact 10-day window. And again, we have flexibility on the other end. So I believe we've found that although some states put in place 10 days, some states put in other timelines. These timelines are oftentimes used in states to provide the backstop for families to understand that that's the time frame that they have to provide this their residency information to the school district.
Okay, thank you very much. Is there a follow-up?
Sure.
Representative Cotton.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate that. So I guess where I was kind of going with this is sometimes relocation of military families, it can be quite an upheaval and a lot going
yes.
on, especially for a young family with young children. And my fear
yes.
was that it may take them a month to even realize this is an option. By the time they get their feet on the ground, they start thinking, okay, we need to get little Johnny enrolled. And 10 days has long gone by, and because the language says the parent of the student shall provide to the district within 10 days after arrival this proof of notice, I just didn't want that to be problematic for military families when they didn't even know maybe this this language existed in the law. So, but you're saying other states have adopted this and haven't had a problem with it that you're aware of?
Right. This has already been adopted and been in place for several years in Arizona and California. This was just adopted in Washington and has been adopted in Nebraska and several other states and hasn't been a problem. For families that are coming in and have young children who don't have these special requirements that Representative LeDoux has alluded to, this isn't going to be a statute that they're going to even reference. They're going to go ahead and just show up on the ground and get enrolled in school just like they have in the past. This is an opportunity for those students who need to get enrolled in advance to have to do that. So again, as Representative LeDoux referenced, these are the opportunity for students who need those high school classes, that need to compete for specific schools, for parents that need who may have children who have specific needs, who need to get students enrolled in advance. And these are unique cases, and it gives the parents an opportunity to call and email in advance to that school and get the students on the wait list and in the queue for those classes in advance. And those are the students we're really trying to reach here. For a family who's just going to show up and put their kids into a mainstream classroom, this is probably not as big of an issue or as necessary because they're not going to have that mandatory, there's not going to be any sort of mandatory need for an advanced enrollment or letting folks or any sort of advanced communication with the school district.
Thank you very much. Representative Jackson, and then after that, Representative Rauscher. Representative Jackson.
Thank you, through the chair. I appreciate this bill because also sharing a district that worked with military, and I had a meeting with military spouses a few weeks ago. So, and they brought this subject up. And I would not change the wording because as being a spouse and transferring my son to different schools, that within the 10 days after arrival, it gives plenty of time. So what I'm saying that this language would not interrupt the process of looking, because you're looking into where am I going to live, you know, the schools. You do that all in advance. The 10 days, you know where you're living at that point of when you're physically here and putting the child in school. So I just think the way it's written will make it less complicated versus intend I intend to, then the schools can one eyebrow up, well, are you or aren't you? Right? So the way it's written, I think it makes it clear and easier for the parents of the student as well as the schools.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Jackson. Representative Rauscher.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman. I'm just trying to, the Mat-Su Borough is a very, very full service kind of a district. We have tech schools for high school kids. We have pathways for those who don't really fall into the category of a normal child. We have different types of schools. So I'm just wondering how this intertwines with that setup, whether it, you know, in charter schools, and then you have different career options for school kids in the higher grades. And I think this is an excellent bill, and I'm wanting to make sure it's seamless with them, and make sure that we can make it seamless with a school district of that caliber, because the Mat-Su Borough School District is very, there's options are endless, and I just want to make sure that they can, because if they come in around December, a lot of the programs are in swing, and I just want a chance to be able to bring it forward to them, and I don't know whether it has, and I guess that's the question.
I know,
has it been brought forward to them, and is there an answer for what I'm worried about?
Well, I'm not quite sure what you're worried about, but we did send it to the Association of School Boards, and they were going to be sending it out to school boards around the state. As far as what you're worried about, Representative Rauscher, I guess I don't see any difference between somebody registering 20 days or 30 days or 60 days before they show up in the state, or showing up in the Mat-Su and then needing to register at one of those schools. So I guess I'm not sure what the problem would be that would be exacerbated by this bill.
So could you explain why, what the bill is making easier? Mm-hmm. That, I guess that would be my question.
Right.
Well, that's the kind of the whole essence of the bill. If you can register before you are physically in the state, but you've gotten your orders to be in the state, then the child can register, be eligible for the lotteries, for all those charter schools, be eligible to enroll in certain classes that might already be filled up. So it's just sort of pretending, if you're a military dependent, that you're actually already here.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
And Ms. Perrault, do we want to respond as well?
I believe the sponsor has covered that clearly. I don't have any further comments for Representative Rauscher at this time.
Thank you very much. And I also imagine that depending on the time of year, this district will at least have to have their neighborhood schools available for them. And so any of those other optional schools or charter schools, they may have missed the deadline. But just in case, like if someone's coming in at the end of August, and then they can go ahead and get registered at the beginning of August once they know that they're on their way here, and be able to take advantage of those opportunities if the timing is right.
I see. Thank you.
Any other further questions or discussions?
Well, I actually have a question for Ms. Perrault right now.
Go ahead, Representative.
And am I pronouncing your name right?
Perrault, yes, ma'am.
Okay. So, on Section 1G, and I've basically taken this from, you know, what you recommended to us. It doesn't have anything specific as to the parent providing the school district with the notification of the transfer. And I think that's why we might have been getting a little bit confused with the second section, which talked about, or the second sentence, which talked about within 10 days after the arrival, you've got to show your residency. But should there be something in it that says that you've got to show a copy of your orders or something like that when you pre-register like this? That's just a question I'm throwing out there.
Ms. Perot, did you hear that question?
Yes. Yes, and I believe, and I defer to the committee on the clarity that you wish to provide for this statute. If you believe that that would provide further clarity on this, you are as the sponsor of this bill, Representative Ledoux, provided absolute specific clarity on what the intent of this bill is, the policy behind this bill is, when you introduced it.
I understand so that, but Representative Copp's question made me stop thinking about
that. There needs to be some further clarity
that.
In the writing of it. That's really up to those of you there as the sponsor and as the committee.
So you don't have any opinions on that then?
No, ma'am.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Perot. Let me interject real quick that Representative Tarr joined us about 1:20. Thank you, Representative Tarr. Representative Cott.
Yeah, so thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you again, Representative Ledoux. I think this bill is addressing an important issue to make it easier for military families to register their children ahead of time. But because now we know we are talking about ahead of time, that it is the first paragraph that, and I think it's that where some clarity is needed, and also because Alaska is so big and we have multiple military installations, I think what we're talking about is parents of students who are serving out of district, in other words, out of the school district. It could be a parent from Fort Wainwright up in Anchorage coming down to Fort Richardson. So a parent of a student serving out of district on active duty as a member of the Armed Forces of the U.S. and is transferred pending military transfer, illustration, pending transfer to a military installation in the district. In other words, they're going from out of district to in the district, because I think it's the word in the state that threw me, because we have so many military facilities around Alaska that we're really just talking about going from out of district into the district under an official military order. To me, that might make it clearer that we are talking about advanced registration and recognizing that we have multiple military districts in Alaska.
I think that's sure. A good idea to include. I mean, if you're going from Fort Wainwright down to Fort Rich or something like that, thank you very much for that suggestion.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much, Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And apologies for being tardy, so if this already came up. But I'm thinking more of a circumstance where, you know, someone is stationed in North Carolina and they find out they're, you know, going to be transferred to Alaska. And so depending on the timing of that transfer, you know, they may not physically be present at the time when the enrollment opens and be disadvantaged because they don't have access in the same way that someone, even though they know they're coming. So that all makes sense to me. The only concern I have is I know the student count date is sometime in early October, and that's for the funding. And like I say, I don't know, apologies if this came up, but is there any sort of concern about sort of the numbers being, you know, off in any way, or what happens in a circumstance where maybe they don't end up arriving for some reason? I don't know how often that could happen, but I just know that we do actually get groups that are, you know, in the hundreds or thousands in if there's a, you know, shift, for example, like what's going to happen up in Fairbanks right now. It's going to be a pretty substantial number coming in. So what, you know, for purposes of planning on the BSA and the student count, will these students be able to be included, or how does that work, or is that unrelated? Is this just more them actually getting to register?
It's more them getting to register, but I do think that that is a good point. So what happens if they register and then their military orders don't come through? But then again, what happens if somebody registers and they're in state or they're in the district and then they move? So,
and if I may, we're talking about for the base student allocation, we're actually talking about the ADM, which I think is the average daily membership. Mm-hmm. And I think that gets trued up again in October. Mm-hmm. But what's nice about this is that if somebody from North Carolina is coming up to Alaska, they can go ahead and register. That school district can already count them as their ADM, their average daily membership. And I don't know how often orders get canceled or orders get changed. I don't know how often that happens, but I guess it'd be the same thing as any family decides to move at any given time, whether they're military or not.
Mr. Chairman, that's the point I wondered, is for purposes of the count, just being registered, will they be able to include them? I think that's the way it could.
I don't know the answer
okay.
to that question. I guess we need to get somebody here from the Department of Education.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's a good question. Any other questions?
And maybe we can try to get somebody from Department of Education here for our next meeting.
And then I have a question on page 2. We have 2, A, B, and C. On C, line 4, we have federal government housing or off-base military housing provided through a public-private venture. Shouldn't that be like A, B, C, and then D? Because if you have the principal dwelling place, or if you have a temporary billeting facility on a military base, you're not going to have an off-base military housing provided. So I almost think, because we have and then we go into an or, I think each one of these can be an or, but I think I'd rather see an A, B, C, and then have C broken up to a D. So just a suggestion. I'm not sure why it's written that way. I don't know, Ms. Perot, if you know why it's written that way.
I do not know why it is written that way, and I believe that if, for greater clarity, it could be written the other way as you suggested. To provide greater clarity, it could easily be written with an or rather than an and there. If I may make a comment about your question about the student head count, as we have run into this discussion in other states.
Yes, please.
In that this bill has provided benefits for states trying to get accuracy in their student head count, because you are essentially treating these students as though they are in your state, right? You are saying, we know they're coming. They have orders to be coming to the state, and we are treating them as though they will arrive. We are considering that it is rare that orders are going to be changed. We are getting them enrolled in school just as though they are here on the ground in the state, and we are counting them in the head count as though they are arriving. Then when they arrive in October, when they arrive in September, they're there, and then we have a better sense of what our headcount is. Now, it sounds like you're not doing headcount until October, so you would have these students there if the arrival is as it normally is the September, October, in the September, or the late August, September time frame. So we've seen benefits in some states from this. In being able to project headcounts. I hope that's some helpful information to think about. I hope your Department of Ed is able to help define that. You're not giving a benefit to your military students. You're simply putting them on an even playing field with the students who are already there in your state. You're allowing them to have access to those same opportunities as the students who are already there, and treating them as though they're already there. And again, this is those students who need access to those same opportunities, and ensure that they aren't set back by not being able to graduate on time because they don't have access to classes, or those students with special needs who need access to specific resources that they maybe wouldn't be able to get if they didn't arrive in time.
Thank you, Mrs. Perot. And we also have Heidi Teschner, who's our Administrative Service Director for the Department of Education. Would you like to help us with this this question?
Mr. Chair.
And thank you for being here. Yes, Representative Tarr.
And since we have you, before you talk, then maybe you can weave this in, because the things I'm thinking of in my area when I've met with principals, it seems like sometimes if one family, like one new family comes in, but maybe they have five or six kids, it actually is pretty impactful when it, budget-wise, with how tight things have been. Or if any of those kids have any special needs and it's related to title funding, you know, some of those things, I just didn't realize sort of like how fine a detail it can sometimes be at the individual school level. We're often looking at like the statewide numbers. Mm-hmm. So that's my curiosity, if that helps.
For the record, Heidi Teschner, Administrative Services Director for the Department of Education and Early Development. To go back to your, when you, Representative Tarr, when your first question. So Alaska has a 20-day count period, which always ends the fourth Friday in October. So as long as a student is enrolled in that school, they will count towards the average daily membership for the foundation formula funding.
And then if I may follow up on that, anything after that period, just like any other student moving in the area, the district can't count them until the next year if they enroll again. But there is no other a half year benchmark for checking those. Is it average daily membership? Is that, yeah? That's the only time period for that. Is that correct?
That is correct. So we have one count period per year.
So, Representative, can I ask a question here?
Yes.
So I had heard that it depended upon whether you were present when they took the roll that day. Was that understanding incorrect?
So Alaska doesn't have, it's not based on attendance, so it's based on membership, which is your enrollment. So districts or students can be absent during the count period, like if they go on vacation or there's other reasons why they need to be gone, like they're sick or something. They still count towards that membership.
Representative Jackson.
Thank you, through the chair. So do you allot for the possibility of people moving in? Is there any kind of within a certain percentage? Because that's almost a given. It seems as though it would be, right? So when the kids enroll, and you're doing the membership fee, whatever it is, it seems like you would have some kind of adjustment, or is this per child period?
Through the chair, there's no adjustment made. So it's whatever count that the districts report to the department, and that is what's used in the formula for determining it. I know that there are districts who gain and lose students throughout the year. I don't know what the statistics exactly are and how much that fluctuates, but I think between how that changes and fluctuates throughout the year could balance out, but a district would have to be able to answer that one directly.
And I know our recorder is very capable, but if we can remind the recorder who we are when we speak. So, yeah, thank you very much. Representative Tarr, did you have a follow-up, Ms. Jackson? You good? Okay, Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could you just please say again, it's the 20-day something-something, so I can write it down.
Yes, Heidi Teschner for the record. I don't remember the statute off the top of my head, but it's a 20-day school count period that always ends the fourth Friday in October.
Thank you.
Representative Thompson.
Thank you. I don't think that if they get registered through the school district, then they're going to be included in the student count. Mm-hmm. I don't have any problem there. But I can see where maybe students are going to have a problem. let's say, Eielson Air Force Base, they're going to be having a huge influx of military. And they're trying to get their kid in because he has to take a biology class in order to be able to graduate. And so they are trying to get that. And they register at Eielson High School. When they get to town, well, the Air Force is not going to provide housing for all this influx of military. So they end up moving into town, clear out by West Valley High School. And now that class was already filled up in biology, they thought they had it out on Eielson, but now they're living 28 miles away. And so I can see a problem for a student. I don't think that this, you can't really fix that. I think it could be a problem for kids trying to get those specific classes before that they show up. They're trying to get that registration in. Then when they get here, they don't live anywhere near that high school. They've moved, you know, they had to get housing further away. So I can see a problem for a kid trying to get through school, thinking that they are going to get that biology class. They're now living within two blocks of West Valley High School, and that class is already full. So I can see that there's going to be some juggling that'll have to go on through that process. But I see where we aren't going to have any problem with the base student allowance because the school district covers that whole thing, and that should be fine. But there's no way to fix what I'm talking about. It's just I can see that there's going to be possibly some problems.
Ms. Perot, did you hear that statement from Representative Thompson?
Yes, I did. Thank you very much. Representative Tech, would you like some comments on that statement? Are you looking for some feedback on that statement?
Can you share with us how orders are given and how often those change? And is there when a military member receives their orders, do they already know where they're going to be living, or does that come later, or how does that? If you don't mind walking us through that process, so we know how that works.
Sure, absolutely. So in general, orders are received. So I'm going to share how the ideal process is supposed to work, and you're going to hear a lot of stories if you go out and talk to military members about how it oftentimes works in reality, okay? But ideally, the first military families receive something called an RFO, or a request for orders, and that's the notification of where they're going to be moving to. And families receive that notification usually sometime in the late winter, January, February, March time frame. And they'll say, and you'll hear families talk about, I received my RFO or my request for orders or I received word that my next assignment is going to be at J-Bear. I'm going to J-Bear. And then their orders are oftentimes not actually cut, or they don't receive their orders until 60 to 90 days in advance of when their move is going to be. So the military still tries to move families in the summertime. And so oftentimes those orders will come to families sometimes in the May time frame. So we can look at families starting to get orders around this time of year. We're in April now, and so families are starting to see their orders now to move over the summertime. And families receive their orders, but they don't know where their housing is going to be. Families receive orders, and they receive what's called permissive TDY when they arrive at their location and that's about 2 weeks to go out and find their housing. So I believe it was Representative Jackson who mentioned that 10-day time frame is really the right amount of time for families. Families know once they've done some research before they arrive at their duty station, and they know after they arrive at their duty station about 10 days, they know where they're going to settle in at. There's a lot of online resources for families to identify where their home's going to be at. They know in advance of getting to their duty station whether there's going to be on-base housing for them. They've called in advance, and they've gotten on a wait list in advance to know whether they're going to get on-base housing. They're not going to get on-base housing. They know areas that they're going to need to look for off-post housing, and they're going to have already started to look for that because they need to have identified where their household goods are delivered. This bill is also especially important for folks moving up to Alaska because it takes a little longer for your household goods to get up there. And folks oftentimes arrive a little bit later because they take a little bit more time traveling oftentimes. Sometimes some families decide to drive. They decide to take a little bit of extra time when their cars are being shipped. And so families often arrive a little bit closer to when the school arrives, the school gets started. And then when folks arrive, they've got usually 2 weeks to get settled into their house. And then the family starts to work, and the kids get into school in that time, and that's kind of the process. So, are there any questions about how that kind of goes? Now, there are times that it's quite condensed, and families make that all happen in the course of about 4 weeks. But that's generally the time frame that we try to spread it out in the Department of Defense.
Okay, actually, I have a question. So,
absolutely.
So they get their orders 60 to 90 days before, in advance, before they have to arrive somewhere. But it sounds like they don't even know what their housing is, even within 2 weeks of arrival. Did I hear that correctly?
There are some families that may not know their final housing situation until they arrive on the ground and have that finalized. There are some families that may know it well in advance. It just depends on the family. If you're a young family and it's just, and you're just going to go downtown and rent an apartment, you may just do that when you get there. You may just get there and you may just say, okay, I'm just going to go rent an apartment and that's what I'm going to do. If you're a family that has more specific needs and you know the neighborhood that you want to get into, you may be connected with a sponsor who will help you find that house before you get to your duty station, and you'll connect with that sponsor who will help you find a house to rent, and you'll identify that before you get on the ground. So it just really depends on the family and what they decide to do in advance. Some families decide well in advance what they're going to do, some don't.
Thank you very much. Representative Kopp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So two things seem to be coming out of the discussion. One, uncertain actual physical residency, and two, as Representative Tarr and Representative Thompson pointed out, uncertain as to actual school until it's contacted and they know for sure there's room. So in looking at that last, the sentence on 9, 10, and 11, it seems like it's the arrival date is kind of, I go back to that as being problematic, but I understand the need for some timeline. So it would seem like if that said that the parent will provide the school district a copy of the military order showing proof of residence, because that can be modified when they finally get within 10 days of the student's first day of attendance. Because that would allow for a little school shopping, right? And you actually say, okay, this school has room, we've been accepted, and then within 10 days they show that school. Because 10 days after the arrival date, they may not have their place figured out, and they may not have their school figured out. But if we say within 10 days of the student's first day of attendance, by then the parent probably has both those things figured out. At their school, their kid is attending school now, and they probably know where they're living, so they can show proof of residency because they're there now. And so I was just looking at a better way to say that it would flow for the type of situations that we're coming up with.
Okay, thank you very much, Representative Kopp. I see this as a two-part, right? The first part is a head notification to the school district. And then the second part is the having to provide residency. So on the first part, and I think we talked about possibly maybe changing that first paragraph to talk about that something has to be submitted to the school district. And I think it actually benefits the education. Is it a department? Education department. So that so then they can be counted in that district ahead of time. Whether it goes to this school, that school, or this school, we already know what the district is, whose district is going to be in. And then I guess the second part is what you just brought up, Representative Kopp, and that is providing the residency. And it actually makes sense to me that maybe 10 days after the student first attend school might be a little bit more comfort because things can change. They may already have housing figured out, but then by the time they get here, housing isn't figured out and they're scrambling. So any further comments? No? And make any additional comments or questions? Representative Tarr.
I just want to make sure, because I'm not looking at the underlying statute that is being amended here, that this is all still in the context of registration. So we're not just saying notify the district, but actually I think more important for the family is allowing the student to register in the district, because that's how they would be able to select classes and, you know, be considered registered for the purposes of sports teams and things like that, right?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So I think that what benefits the district the most is if this timeline that's being followed, and it sounds like to me that it's pretty standard for orders to be given in those early or late winter months, and then processes happen throughout the summer, and that's probably just so families can get their children enrolled, but this bill would provide a buffer, because some districts start sooner than other districts depending on state to state and different communities. So this would allow that opportunity. So it sounds like the majority of that is within the beginning of the school year that you'll see a lot of this enrollment happening.
So it seems to me that there, the next time that this bill is brought before the committee, that there perhaps need to be three modifications. Modification number one is to clarify that it doesn't simply have to be from out of state. If you're transferring from a district in Alaska to another district in Alaska, this bill encompasses that. Secondly, in the first sentence, have something about providing a copy to the school districts, to providing a copy of the orders. And then in the second sentence, that's 9 to 11, that it would be 10 days after the first day that the children are attending school. Do we have it there?
So far, I have one additional one, but let's take Representative Jackson first.
Okay. Thank you, through the chair. The orders, I don't know if I would have that in here, because as she said, they have their goal and when they intend to send the orders out, but it does not always happen that way. So as a mother, knowing I'm going to Alaska, I will be stationed at, back then, Fort Richardson, I start looking in that area. So the schools make it mandatory that you're sending records of the children anyway, right? So I don't think the orders may be DD 214. What are you proving with the orders? You know, because things can change. Maybe they were sending you to Wainwright, but things change. You're going to J-Bear. So I would not include the orders, because it's making things solid that is actually pretty fluid. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Jackson.
So,
care to comment on that, Representative Ledoux?
Well, I think what you're saying makes absolute sense. So I'm just not sure. It would seem that I take that back. I was going to say somewhere along the line, you have to show, let the school district know that you're enrolling. Well, that can be when you're enrolling. They're going to get it when, you know, you send in the application form, and there should just be a little check mark or something in an explanation, hey, I'm not here now, but we've got our orders.
Orders pending.
Yes.
Okay, everybody good with that? Any comments on that? Okay, then the other thing I wanted to mention was I really do think that when we talk about residence includes, I think we need to divide C into 2 and D on page 2.
So federal government housing
and off-base military housing provided through a public private venture. So those are all conditions of residence.
So actually, and this would be a question for Ms. Perot, why do you need anything in there other than resident includes the principal dwelling place of an active duty parent? It doesn't matter, I mean, if the principal dwelling place is in a billet, if it's in federal government housing, off-base housing, a friend's home, wherever it is. Do I need anything other than the principal dwelling place of an active duty parent?
Yeah.
That's a good, very, very good question. Ms. Perot, do you have a comment on that?
I do not have a comment on that. If it meets your statutory guidance to leave that with less specifics, then obviously that is an appropriate way to write that statute.
Mm-hmm. Seems appropriate.
Thank you.
Yep, thank you very much. Representative Kopp.
On that, Mr. Chairman, because residence is so exhaustively established in state statute for a number of other things, it probably is a good idea to leave it out so we don't have one more conflict.
That's good. Keep it simple.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Tarr.
So did we decide sort of or has arrive at a conclusion on the suggestion about changing the timing that it would be then not having to previously show the orders, but when you did the registration, there'd be a way to check off pending orders. And so then, you know, kid shows up at school, and within 10 days of that, they need to provide something else.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
And so, so written proof of residence on an official document. Okay.
And I'm not even certain when we do a CS or an amendment whether that has to be, I mean, whether we have to create an official document for that.
Right. Okay. Sounds really good.
Any other questions, comments? Representative Thompson? No? All right, this is a very good discussion. Representative Tarr?
Well, and I was just going to say, this is something I haven't really thought of before, but I imagine a lot of families in Anchorage will be really happy about, because with so many charter schools, but just single option charter schools, one German immersion, one Spanish immersion, that military families would be really disadvantaged because you've got to get in on the lottery to be selected. And so thank you for bringing this forward.
All right. I would like to thank the committee for hearing this bill. I want to thank you, Ms. Tishner, for showing up and answering those questions. If the chair would like to call an at ease, I can go back up to my place.
We'll call an at ease and then open it up for public testimony. We're at ease.
Let's come back to order right now. We're now going to go into public testimony. So I'm going to open up public testimony. And we have, in addition to Ms. Perot being there for questioning, she is also here to give testimony about the bill. And I just understand that Ms. Allard may be here on her own to testify as a military person. So anyway, we'll begin with Ms. Perot, and if you could identify yourself for the record and tell us with whom you're affiliated, and then you can begin your testimony.
Madam Chair, Tammy Perot with the Department of Defense. Thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony on House Bill 109. As you know, this is a very important bill to the Department of Defense, and especially important for the 10,000 active duty military school age children attending school K through 12 students in Alaska. I will keep this testimony brief, as we have already had a great opportunity to discuss the benefits of this bill, and I have also provided written testimony in support of this bill. We believe that this bill has the opportunity to provide a positive effect on the educational experiences of military children and families, And as you simply provided information of this discussion, it allows parents who they can.
Tammy, are you on like a speakerphone or something like that? Because you're really breaking up.
Oh, I apologize. Is this a bit better? I'm just on a phone that's traveling. I will repeat what I just provide, the information I've just provided. Again, I appreciate the opportunity to call in today and provide testimony. And as we've already had the opportunity to speak about this today, I will just be brief, as you also have my written testimony. There's, as you know, nearly 10,000 active duty K-12 military school age children attending school in the state of Alaska. And so Alaska has a unique position to support these children. And as you already stated in the introduction of this bill, this can help not only high school students to ensure they get the classes they need, special needs students to ensure they get the classes they need, and as has been discussed, charter school students. So on behalf of the Department of Defense, I would like to encourage the committee to move this bill out of committee and onto floor proceedings. We appreciate the policy, your support of the policy within this bill, and we support your efforts to continue to support military children. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Do we have any further questions? We do. Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Perot, you said there are 10,000 school-age military children. Do you know if we, if you're considering that, is that 5 to 18? And then if yes, then how many military children are in that earlier age group? Just because one of the things we've been working on and thinking about is early education opportunities. I'm just curious how many of those kids are here. Oh, maybe we lost her. Okay.
Ms. Perot, did you hear the question?
Okay, well, maybe we'll find that out and share it with them.
At ease, is she gone? Ms. Perot,
ma'am, can you hear me now?
Yes, yes. Did you hear the question from Representative Tarr?
Okay. There are approximately 9,800, so just under 10,000 K-12 students. And when you asked about earlier numbers, are you asking for under age 5?
Yes, ma'am.
I do not have the under age 5 numbers, but I can be in touch with you and see if I can get those numbers, that data for you.
Okay, thank you. I would just be curious because we don't have comprehensive pre-kindergarten, for example, but we have been expanding it over the last couple of years and thinking about school readiness. And I was just thinking, you know, of course, some of these students would have challenges just from moving schools, you know, maybe harder to stay up. And so just thinking about the kind of more comprehensive, needs of the military youth as they're moving around the country. So that would be helpful if you have anything.
Yes, I can try to get that data for you. Right now I only have the K-12 data, but I will see about getting the under 5 data for you. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Thank you. Did you have a question, Representative Tarr?
Just a quick comment that the military does have the home Heroes at Home program, which is the Parents and Teachers program, so they actually do a very good job of covering the 0 to 5 years of age through that program. Mm-hmm. But it is an interesting question to know how many potentially in case they enroll in some of our voluntary pre-K programs.
Mm-hmm. Do we have any more questions for Ms. Perot? All right. Well, thank you very much. We appreciate your answering our questions and your testimony. If you wouldn't mind remaining online, so if anybody else has any more questions for you, we'd really appreciate it. Thank you. Do we have anybody else, either online or in the audience, who would like to testify?
For the record, my name is Jamie Allard. I'm a military spouse. I've been in Alaska since 2010. My husband has served active duty in the military for 28 plus years. I myself am a veteran. I do work for Commissioner Sachs at the Military and Veterans Affairs, but I am testifying for myself.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So I first wanted to state through the chair, the reason I'm here testifying is because within the state of Alaska, we do have a National Guard. It's more unusual with our state, but active duty National Guard members do have a tendency to move regularly 2 to 3 years. Sometimes they even get extensions. So it would be very important for these individuals to be able to continue as if they were coming from North Carolina and other places that were mentioned. And to be able to give them a little bit of a help in being able to register their children would be great. And sometimes we don't know where we're going. We might know the installation that we're attending, but we don't necessarily know the school district we're in. As a personal experience for myself, when we arrived in 2010, we were actually in a hotel for up to 90 days. My daughters were 3 and 4 years old, so I wanted them to get a little bit of a head start. And so I actually had my daughter who was about to turn 5, and I had to enroll her in a private school because I didn't know where I was going to be. Even though I had my eyesight on Eagle River, we still had to get a lease. We still had to take care of positions for my husband and where he was going to be in the installation, what side of the installation, because it's relatively large. And so we had a lot to deal with. So had we been able to have a longer time, like Representative Kopp had said, it would have given us a better, a little bit easier leeway than just, here you are, you have 10 days, and now you need to know, because sometimes we don't know. And then that's really it. I'm definitely in favor of this bill, and I think it would be extremely helpful.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Do you know whether at some point the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs may have an official position on the bill?
I don't know if Verdi Bowen is online, but I definitely know my supervisor encourages it.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And I don't believe that Verdi is online. Representative Rauscher.
Yeah, thank you. I was just wondering, and this is just a question. I don't know. Does the military even have some sort of an understanding about kids, and they try to help out parents when they're giving orders on where they must go or not? Or is that kind of secondary and they could care less?
Through the chair, the military always supports their military veterans and their spouses and their family members. But what I will say is that we're pretty self-sufficient. So we have to learn to do things on our own as well. They do care, but there's a lot of decisions. Like, we just don't know where we're going to be all the time. And there is a possibility that we do get orders within 15 days. And that was the other thing I wanted to also mention, is that if we don't always have military orders because things do happen, that we could always go to our JAG. And this could be possibly something that's added to the bill, that we could get a letter from a JAG legal, so that we could say, yes, we're here, and that we could get that extension for them to be there. So the military does care. It's just a matter of how much help we kind of get. It could be limited. Sometimes the spouses don't know where to reach out to get that help either.
A follow-up.
Go ahead.
What was that word you used, some sort of legal JAG? Is that what you said?
Yes, through the chair. It's our Judge Advocate's Office.
Okay.
Yes, and they're the legal representation for military personnel.
I thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to make sure that we got this clarified a little bit. The way the bill is set up is for active duty military members. Are active duty National Guard, are those considered active duty military? If they're National Guard, they could be transferred from Eielson to Elmendorf, and that all fits with this entire bill, but is the Guard considered active military in this particular bill?
Through the chair, sir, yes. So you do have active duty military Guard that move within the state of Alaska. I have a friend right now. He is stationed here in Anchorage, and he will be moving to Greeley. So he will be there for 3 years, and he just got to Anchorage 3 years ago.
So they are active duty?
Yes, sir, they are.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was going to be my question, too. Representative Jackson.
Thank you. So with that said, because, yeah, there are active duty status, but I believe that this bill, if the language would include National Guard, it would cover National Guard.
So I think, Representative Jackson, that there might be a possibility, if we don't do that, that only National Guard that have been activated might be included, as opposed to National Guard who are not activated. We can run that through Ledge Legal, but we want to make sure that we do include the Guard. Any other questions? So I understand that Mr. Bowen is on the line, but he's on the line for your bill, Representative Jackson. So maybe I can press some sort of button here and see if I can get him on the line.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
This is Verdi Bowen, the Director of Veterans Affairs. And yes, I'm on the line. And yes, we are fully in support of this, of House Bill 109, especially with the omitted changes that are going forward. The hardest thing that we see across the state, whether it's active duty or our active guard that's in active status, when they transfer from one place to another, is the transition of children from one school to another. And in order to make the playing field fair, it is much, this bill is greatly needed in order to allow those children to access those education benefits and actually not have to attend longer school periods of time. And I had to smile a little bit when someone was asking the question about transition. And my children, it took them 2 months to transition from a 12-hour deficit because we were in Turkey and we come to Alaska. And it took them quite a few months to get used to the time lag. So I can imagine, you know, what many children go through as they go from one side of the world to the other and land in Alaska, and they're trying to go to one of our beautiful schools. And they get the opportunity to select either a charter school or a special bilingual school or another type of program that we have here that will allow them to do trades. And then when they get here, they discover that they're unable to apply to the school because it's full. And if they could have applied in June or July when the orders came through, that they would have had an opportunity to compete. And so this bill here would just add another tool to the bag that the families have as they transfer from one location to another. With that said, if there's any questions, I'm open.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Do we have any questions for Mr. Bowen? All right. Thank you. And thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Allard. So, is there anyone else, either online or in the audience, who would like to testify on 109? Well, seeing and hearing no one, I am going to close public testimony. Are there any further questions or comments from the committee? Well, seeing none, amendments for this bill should be in my office no later than noon, Friday, April 19th. I'm going to take care of the things that we talked about, including the National Guard in a CS. But if anybody else has any amendments to make, make sure that I have them by noon on Friday. And it is my intent to move this bill out of committee next Tuesday, April 23rd. So, our second item on the agenda, and it is our last item on the agenda, is military family employment reference and preference.
Brief at ease, Madam Chair.
go back on record. Thank you very much, Representative Tuck. We do have 193, and I think all we're going to be doing on that today is hopefully just passing it out.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Today. So the second item on the agenda, which is not the last item on the agenda, is military House Bill 113, and is it Military Family Employment Preference or Reference?
Preference.
Preference, that's what I thought. And Representative Tuck.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Would you like to?
Can I have an ease real quick? Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair, I do. I move that the Military and Veterans Affairs Committee adopt the blank committee substitute for House Bill 113, Work Order Number 31-LS0715/U, as a working document.
And I'm going to object for purposes of discussion. Representative Jackson, you can join us at the presentation table, or you can remain where you are. And if you have any staff that are with you that you would like to join you at the table, please do so. And please introduce yourself for the record and introduce your staff and walk us through the bill and any changes.
Good afternoon. My name is Sharon Jackson. I'm from House District 13, which covers Eagle River, Chugiak, and a portion of Jay Bear. Before you is a House Bill 113, a bill that I refer to as the Blue Star, Gold Star Family Act. It empowers spouses and dependents to have a better chance at improving their lives. Everyone in this committee is now aware of the plight military spouses and their dependents when they move from state to state, whether the challenge is about educational opportunities or employment. The challenge has not changed. Data from the Department of Defense show the military spouses are amongst the highest unemployed group, higher than the national rate. Your packets contain a letter from DOD. Military spouses and their families sacrifice as much as an active duty member, just about as much. Alaska's economic development will benefit from this incentive. There are many areas like education, health care, where we have a difficult time recruiting qualified people. Census data provided by Rep. Tuck a few weeks ago show that most military spouses have health care and education training and degrees. This information is available online via U.S. Census Office and the annual social economic supplement of the current population survey. Our invited testimony will include Dana Mancialli, a national expert about military families and veteran employment issues, also Verdi Bowen with the Department of Military and Veteran Affairs, and Terry Gales, asking states to take action. No, sorry, Department of Labor will be able to answer technical questions. I will have my staff, Eric Cordero. He will go over a brief presentation with you and sectional, and we will be happy to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Jackson. Is Ms.
Mr. Cordero going to indicate the changes between the original bill and the committee substitute?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, Chair.
For the record, my name is Eric Cordero, staff to Representative Sharon Jackson. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee, for allowing us to present this bill today. Before I go through the changes, may I first go through the PowerPoint presentation? It's very brief.
Sure.
So, as Representative Jackson said, what the bill does is extends current hiring preferences to military spouses and their dependents. And one additional thing that the bill does is that it extends those preferences to what is commonly known as Gold Star families. These are spouses or dependents of someone who died while serving our country, while in active duty. Most states provide benefits like this to military spouses and dependents. We don't. And so why are we doing this? As Representative Jackson mentioned, military spouses tend to be in a group of highly unemployed persons, also underemployed, and that has to do with a lot of frequent moves. The problem that we see with spouses and families is that they have gaps in their resumes when they apply for new jobs, or they simply, when they're being interviewed and they're being asked, so where do you see yourself in 3 years from now? They don't know if they're going to get moved or transferred to another location. And so those are just some of the challenges. And as Rep. Jackson said, you have seen bills that are trying to address these same issues. So what is a Blue Star family? A Blue Star family are spouses and dependents of active duty service members or veterans. Gold Star families are spouses or dependents of a deceased member who died while in active duty. And so the bill will extend the benefits that we currently have for veterans and members of the National Guard to Blue Star families and Gold Star families. So our current law, and I would love to say that this bill is simple, but it's not. Our current law allows the state of Alaska, if they use a tool during the hiring process that uses a numerical rubric, to give passing candidates who happen to be veterans or members of the National Guard an extra 5 points or 10 points if they are disabled. That doesn't mean that they get a job. That just simply means that they get a little bit of extra points, but they still have to meet all the qualifications of the job and be able to have all the licensures and requirements that anybody else has. If the tool that the state of Alaska uses doesn't use numbers or a rubric, then the benefit simply says you will get an interview. But that doesn't mean that they'll get a job. That doesn't mean that they'll be the first ones to get an interview. It just simply means you'll have a chance. And that's pretty much what we currently have. And as I mentioned before, and Representative Jackson mentioned, the House Bill 113 will extend that to families and dependents. 24 states provide preferences to spouses and surviving spouses. Just to give you an example, Alabama, Arizona, Arkansas, California, Colorado. And so I know in my slide it says questions, but I would like to go through the Representative Jackson wanted to add something.
Okay. So Sharon Jackson, District 13. So your packets contain a letter from DOD asking states to take action to help military spouses. Our current statutes, as Mr. Cordero stated, allows the state and private employees to give hiring preferences to veterans and members of the National Guard. Most states do that. However, one of the items that we do not have in our books are hiring preferences for military spouses and dependents. So as was mentioned, this gives an opportunity. I hear over and over that our work pool doesn't have the expertise that our community need. What this will do is extend our work pool and give the opportunity for military spouses to integrate more in our communities.
Through the chair, Eric Cordero, staff representative Sharon Jackson. I'm going to talk about the changes from the original bill to the CS that the committee moved. The original bill did not spell out active service members in the section that expands the benefits to spouses and families, and so the new CS makes that clear. Also, we found that there was a section in which we did not specify in regards to members that get extra points because they have a disability, active service members or veterans. We use the word veterans or National Guards who are disabled, but there's actually a federal definition of a disabled veteran versus a veteran that becomes disabled regarding benefits, and so the CS fixes that by putting the word disabled before the word veteran. And also, our legal department found that there were a few other statutes in the Alaska Personnel Act that reference preferences for veterans and members of the National Guard. So the change that they did is include those statutes in the CS, and they simply changed whenever it says veterans or National Guard member preferences to reference the amended sections that we had in the original bill. So those are the only changes, Madam Chair. So if you would like, I would like to go through the sectional, if that's okay with you.
That would be great.
So you should have with you a sectional analysis for version U. And so section 1 doesn't prohibit a private employer from having hiring preferences for persons described in section 2 of this bill. And section 2 extends those benefits to spouses and dependents of active members and those who have Gold Star families in this case. As for why this has to do with private employers, the legislature passed a law that went into effect last year that took away any potential liabilities of private employers that could that would voluntarily want to have hiring preferences for veterans. And so Section 1 and Section 2 extend that protection to the private sector for Blue Star and Gold Star families. Section 3 is what I mentioned regarding adding references to the new bill, to the new provisions of House Bill 113 to the State of Alaska Personnel Act. Section 4, this amends the employment preferences for veterans or former prisoners of war, adding new language to include families of an active duty service member, veteran, or former prisoner of war. This section clarifies the type of preference given the hiring process and whether the applicant is disabled or not. So this goes back to whether the tool that is used is a rubric or whether it's just a regular interview. Section 5 clarifies that a person may only receive one type of preference and not multiple types of preferences when they're applying for a job. Section 6 is to clarify that this bill does not involve interpreting any amendments of a current collective bargaining agreement and makes a reference to the other subsections that have been added to the new statutes. Section 7 is a new section that adds and defines what a dependent child is. And for purposes of this bill, a dependent child is someone who is 19 years or younger, or someone who is 23 years or younger who is a full-time student at an institution that is recognized by the Alaska Department of Education. And then Section 8 removes language that has been included in Section 4 of this bill for redundancy and to make it more consistent. So those are the sections of the bill, Madam Chair, and I don't know if you have any questions.
Representative Tuck and then Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the age of 23, how did that number come about for a dependent? Because I know that health care can continue to a child for a child up to age 26.
Well, from my understanding, according to the statutes, it covers a child up to 23 as long as they are in college.
Through the chair, Representative Talk, the health care provisions are federal provisions. In the state of Alaska, it usually has been 23. And in the state of Alaska, we are already providing some benefits to what we would call Gold Star families when it comes to tuition and fees through the state education system. They're actually waived for military spouses and peace officers and firefighters who died in the line of duty, and they're trying to get their spouses, the survivors are trying to get an education. So we already do that here. This is just doing it for the military spouses in employment benefits.
So before we go any further, I'm going to remove my objection to the CS, and unless there are other objections, then the CS will become the working document. So, Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also was looking at this definition of the dependent child. So, one thing I had a question about, dependent child means a natural or adopted child, and I just wonder if that would inadvertently exclude stepchildren from the definition of a dependent child, or if that has to be, because that wouldn't be natural or adopted.
Through the chair, Representative Tarr, right now, that's a very good question, because the language does not include a stepchild, but I guess it would depend on the circumstances.
If I may, through the chair, the children, once the family is united, and when a DD-214, it lists your dependents. It won't differ whether it's a stepchild or a child. They are then your dependents, and it is officially documented. Very good question.
Okay. Thank you very much. And, Madam Chair, I have a follow-up.
Go ahead.
And then I just wanted to double-check, just thinking about this whole situation we just had with the accreditation here at UAA, the Part B of this, the 23 years of age and registered at and attending on a full-time basis an accredited educational or technical institution recognized Department of Ed. And so I was just trying to think if there would be circumstances where the student could be attending classes is something that doesn't meet that definition. So an apprenticeship, because 23 is a little bit older, so I'm just wondering a professional trades apprenticeship kind of thing, if there's some reason that you want to have some of the benefit extend to the most comprehensive group of them, if that covers everybody, I guess. Sorry, I'm sort of thinking out loud here, but if that covers everybody.
So through the chair, Section 39.25.159 refers to the Department of Education, all institutions that provide, whether it's technical education or a regular bachelor's degree or not, if a student is taking classes in a non-recognized or non-accredited institution, I think that would be just as if it was a civilian trying to transfer credits and not able to transfer them because their school was not accredited. But I would defer to Bertie Bowen with the department to see if he's able to answer that question in a better way.
Bertie, are you online? Did you hear the question?
This is Bertie Bowen, the Director of Veterans Affairs, and through the chair to Representative Tarr. It is correct that any of those programs, including trades and on-the-job training that we have certified through the post-secondary education, would be included in this.
Okay.
Thank you. Further questions? All right. Well, if there are no further questions, I would like to open this up for public testimony. It's my understanding that in addition to Verdi Bowen, the director of the Office of Veterans Affairs, who is online, we also have Terry Gales with the Division of Labor Standards and Safety. We have Jamie Allard, who's going to testify as an individual, and we also have Dana Manziagli, president of Job Search Masterclass for Veterans and a columnist for Forbes, is online. And so why don't we begin with, oh, and then Tammy Peralta is online. So let's begin with Tammy. Tammy, are you on the line?
Yes, I'm on the line. Could you please repeat that question?
There wasn't any question. This is, we are on House Bill 113 right now, Military Family Employment Preferences, and we have you listed as somebody who would like to testify, presumably in support of the bill.
Yes, I am not providing testimony for this bill today. Thank you, Bill.
All right.
I apologize. I'm not providing testimony. I'm just listening in today. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, so the next person we have is Verdi Bowen.
Yes, this is Verdi Bowen from the Office of Veterans Affairs, and I'm in full support of House Bill 113. It's really interesting that this is referred to as the Blue Star Gold Star Family Act of 2019. What this does is that this will allow the state of Alaska to join 24 other states to provide a benefit to those people that actually, if you will, for the purpose of society are forgotten a lot of times. Their family members that transfer from one place to another, or worse, if that military member dies on active duty, and then that family member appears on the scene of our state without the same benefits of other people. Now, in our state, we have done a great service to those that do pass away simply by adding the UA tuition waiver that we have for those members that do pass away. And what that does, it allows the spouse and the children to have their tuition waivers waived and allows them to receive an undergraduate degree through our university system. What better way could we enhance their ability once they get out of or separate from our school system into the job system is to provide them a wonderful point preference to gain gainful employment within the state of Alaska. The great thing about this is that not only would it enhance their lives, it would enhance their families' lives, and would also show them that that we really do care about the sacrifice that they have made. Then again, you go to the Blue Star families, which are those families that transfer from one location to another. The Department of Defense, or the, if you will, the civilian workforce with it, that supports the Department of Defense, already provides a significant benefit to those members by giving them a preference for jobs. Even my own spouse has utilized that preference in order to gain gainful employment on military installations. But the great thing about that was is it allowed us to move from one location to another and kept the spouse from spending long periods of time without employment. What this will do is that this will help enhance those job skill sets that we do need within our local communities, like nursing and police and fire. And we do have a lot of military spouses that fit that bill, and they would be able to transfer in and receive those job preferences and at least receive a job interview. And in my expertise or my field of interviewing people, I think interviewing is half the battle. Once you can get to the interview stage, then we have an opportunity to see the best of the best. That small little bit of push forward will help that family member become very successful, and also will make our state successful too as well. With that, if there's any questions, we'll stay on the line.
Thank you very much. Do we have any questions? All right. Thank you, Verdi. Next is Terry Gales.
Yes, Tari Gale, Labor Standards and Safety.
And do you have any testimony on today's bill?
No, because it's voluntary, it won't have any fiscal impact or direct impact on labor standards and safety. That's all.
Thank you. Any questions? Dana Masiagli, am I close?
Yes, close, but no cigar. My name is Dana Masiagli, and I'm president of DM Consult. Can I confirm that you can hear me clearly?
Yes, we can, so you may proceed.
Thank you. I am a national expert on the military spouse plight and their families, and would like to definitely not only support Bill 113, House Bill 113 in the state of Alaska, but share a few more insights as to the plight. And the, what's exciting about this bill is this is the kind of momentum that we needed 10 years ago for veterans, where they were facing a crisis of employment. Post-service, active duty service members transitioning out, including veterans, National Guard reserves. Well, their unemployment now is down to the same levels as our national unemployment in the U.S., under 4%. It's great. However, this community has been left behind, and it shows in the numbers. Nationally, ranging from 25 to 30% unemployment, military spouses, as well as a tragic underemployment. So think of unemployment plus underemployment. I'd like to comment on the underemployment for a moment. Military spouses have higher unemployment rates, estimated as much as three times higher than their civilian peers. And 33% report they're underemployed based on their educational background. So this is also a community rich with current degrees, masters, and of course licenses, separate topic. But they are just ripe for jobs, and they want jobs in the civilian community. So whereas our prior spokesperson in the Veterans Affairs Group did a great job, especially in the government job, where the crisis really is with corporations, and their eyes are just lighting up right now. 93% of military spouses are women, and we need diversity in our workforce, so there really is a business case for leveraging this talent and bringing them more of an open door into civilian corporate world and employment. And that's really what this bill does. The challenge, so not only is the gender mostly female, the average age nationwide is about 33 years old. 74% of them have children. And at home or in school, so that ties to the prior bill, of course. And they are having frequent relocations based on following their partners around, their spouses, which are typically male. Now, earnings-wise, back to underemployment, they earn roughly 38% less than their civilian counterparts. There truly is an unconscious bias in corporate America against military spouses. I call it informed. There's ageism, racism, sexism, and there's military spousism. It's prevalent. Because when they walk in the door, if they share they're a military spouse, they immediately have a tag on them that says, you're going to move soon, so I don't want to hire you. Well, that's just grossly unfair, and that's something we want to prevent, and I do that in my coaching to military spouses. What's more important, a statistic from an organization called Blue Star Families in 2017, that military families are far more likely to be struggling on a single income over any other American family. And it's because, at this time, 43% of military spouses were unemployed. And that was back in 2016. It's gone down a little bit. Military spouses lag farther behind civilians when it comes to underemployment, as I already mentioned. And more than half earned less than $20,000 in 2016, and 39% earned less than $10,000. So they're just not able to compete. And it's again, as Eric and our wonderful host of the bill, Ms. Jackson, referenced, this is something that is a serious problem that other states are embracing and corporate America is jumping on to embrace. So in summary, I would love to be a part of this and help with any additional information. And please, I support the bill, and I appreciate your inviting me to this event today.
Thank you very much. Do we have any questions? All right. Is there anyone else, either online or in person, that would like to testify? Ms. Allard?
For the record, my name is Jamie Allard. I live in Eagle River. I'm a military veteran, and I'm also a military spouse of 28 years. And I do work for Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. So I wanted to start off by saying a little bit of my experience when it comes to this and being able to find work and how this could benefit military spouses. I've been federal probably most of my life. I stayed within the federal realm because it allowed me to move from state to state and even overseas when I worked for the U.S. State Department. This allows military spouses to continue their income without missing a beat. And as when I worked, when I first got here to Alaska in 2010, I decided that I wanted to take classes in order to be an instructor for military spouses. In doing so, I took about 15 different classes to instruct military spouses how to get jobs and the new spouses on how to read LESs. Although it might seem easy for us who are military at one point, it's not for new people coming on board. So if you're dealing with a military spouse, let's throw out an age 23, graduated from college, and she's married to an active duty military, and she's moving from state to state, or within our state, she can't find work as easily as other people because, as stated before on the testimony prior, you have a label that you will be moving in 2 to 3 years. So I definitely support this bill. I would be wanting to perhaps suggest that when it comes to the full-time students, or is it part-time, could be in there as well as far as benefits for employment. Because some kids can't take a full-time load and work as well. So that would be something to add. And then I also wanted to add that these are all Alaskans, so they technically wouldn't be taking any positions away from anybody. These are people who have come here because they're serving their country in a different aspect as being married to military members. And for those who do lose their spouse in combat or in other situations and then become a Gold Star, and I would say that there is no military spouse that I know of that would say this is a handout, but it's more of a hand up. And that's it.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The last part you just kind of struck me about the, the handout, the hand up kind of thinking. And just, is this a problem, do you think, that's gotten worse because we've been actively engaged in the Middle East for going on almost 20 years now, and I've just heard a lot of the stories of multiple deployments and things that seem like maybe didn't happen as much, or this extended wartime. I don't know. Do you think these problems are kind of intensifying because of longer service in some of these circumstances?
Through the chair, I was in the military back in the 1990s, so we had Desert Storm and Desert Shield, and I will tell you that I think these are just always been ongoing, regardless if we're in combat or not, whether we're in war or not. And the reason I say that is because whether we're in combat or war or we're being deployed, we're constantly moving around. So I wouldn't say this has changed in that way. I think that it's very difficult for spouses to have to pick up the slack when their military spouse is deployed and gone. So in the way of missing their families, I think it helps because they can get out and meet other people as well. But they sometimes have to pick up the slack, too, and it's difficult.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Any further questions? All right. Well, thank you very much. So is there anyone else, either in the room or online? Seeing and hearing none, I am going to close public testimony. Are there any further questions or comments from the committee? Well, amendments for this bill should be in my office no later than noon, Friday, April 19th, and it is my intent to move this bill out of committee next Tuesday, April 23rd. We have one final item on the agenda, and that is HB 93, Military Spouse Courtesy License. We've heard HB 93, had testimony on that, and the amendment period has passed. No amendments were received. What is the will of the committee?
Madam Chair.
Representative Tarr.
If it sounds like there's no issues, I would be happy to make a motion.
That would...
Oh, pardon me, Representative Thompson.
Chair Ledoux, I make a motion to move HB 93, Military Spouse Courtesy License, version 31-LS0670/M, from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Looking around and hearing and seeing no objections, that bill passes from this committee. And so please stay around after we adjourn in order to sign the bill folder. So our next meeting is scheduled for Tuesday, April 23rd, 2019 at 1 p.m. As a reminder, our Thursday meeting is canceled. It is now 2:51, and this meeting is adjourned.